Hello, I'm Christine, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, the 20th of January, 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Helen, Sharon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, Luke, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, and On This Week in History with Flashback Roger, a Sightloss blog from Sharon, the weather, Beacon Voices, which this week hears from Luke, who tells us all about the Building Better Opportunities Bridges project, which helps people with sight loss into work. And rounding all that off, we have an edition of Tales from the Barn. However, this week, we start on a more sombre note.
We're so sad to bring you news this week of the passing of Doris Hobday, a lovely lady who was one half of the beloved Tipton Twins. Doris and her sister Lillian Cox, who had celebrated their 96th birthday in July, touched the lives of so many people with their positive and funny outlook on life. Doris sadly passed away on January the 5th after contracting COVID-19. Her passing was announced on Good Morning Britain by TV host Piers Morgan and prompted an outpouring of tributes.
There'll only be a handful of people who can pay their respects to acknowledge the memory of this great lady, but Lil has set up a page to raise money for a local charity close to Doris's heart, the Beacon Centre for the Blind in her memory. Info can be found on their social media pages, and I'll be posting it, we all will hear, a little later. So if you want to just contribute to that, it'd be a nice way of remembering Doris. But what a wonderful lady who led a wonderful life and kept up that extraordinary personality and enthusiasm and zest for life right to the end. But listen to what the family said. You know, they were just a few weeks away from being vaccinated. Mm. And sadly for Doris, it was too late.
Her family released a statement in which they said the twins had been determined to live to 100. And it went on to say, "It's just so cruel that COVID has stopped Doris like this. Our thoughts go out to all the families who have experienced a loss through COVID. And we urge people to take this seriously." They have thanked everyone for their support and messages, but have asked that no flowers or cards are sent, and that instead, donations are made in aid of a Beacon Centre who supported Doris's husband, Ray, during their 65-year marriage. "We are so deeply honoured and moved that Doris's sister has chosen to support us and has set up a Just Giving page to raise funds for us." You can find the page at www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Doris Hobday. That's H-O-B-D-A-Y. Doris will be laid to rest with her husband next month. Our thoughts and love go out to Doris's family. We are so very sorry for your loss.
Next we have the local news, starting with Ian.
A person who travelled from Crewe to Wolverhampton to visit a friend has been fined by police for flouting coronavirus rules. The person was among three people in the city fined by neighbourhood officers who took to the streets amid rising case numbers. And almost 200 people in total were instructed to leave after not having a legitimate reason to be out of their homes, or for failing to wear face coverings correctly. Wolverhampton Inspector Sophie Clement said, "It was encouraging to see so many people complying with the regulations. Compared to previous all-out days, so many more people were wearing masks and following distancing rules, and I really want to thank them for playing their part in trying to stop the spread of this deadly virus in our city. Overall, so many people were following the rules, but it was really disappointing to see that others were still ignoring these restrictions and ultimately increasing the risk to other people. We are committed to playing our part in enforcing the regulations and protecting the residents of Wolverhampton." A spokesman for the force said, "Although the majority of people were following the rules, there were a small number of people that appeared to be blatantly ignoring the restrictions. Nearly 200 people were given directions to leave after not having a legitimate reason to be out of their homes or failing to wear face coverings correctly, and 3 people were issued fines, including one person that had travelled from Crewe to visit a friend. The high visibility presence and increased patrols saw officers arrest 3 people wanted for a variety of crimes not related to COVID-19.
Vaccinations will be offered at the Black Country Living Museum later this month, a senior NHS boss has confirmed as he pleaded with people to take COVID seriously. Professor David Loughton, CBE, Chief Executive of Wolverhampton's NHS Trust, which runs New Cross Hospital, made the comments during a regional media briefing on COVID. Asked when people will begin to be vaccinated at the Dudley attraction, he said, "As far as the Black Country Living Museum is concerned, its opening is fairly imminent. I believe it is about January the 25th. We are in the final stages of identifying a number of other sites. We will roll these out as quickly as possible." It was revealed at the start of December that the museum on Tipton Road, which has been forced to close under the national lockdown, had been earmarked as a potential vaccination site, along with Millennium Point in Birmingham, which opened last week. Mr. Loughton also expressed his frustration about people denying COVID's threat and issued a stark warning to those not taking the pandemic seriously. New Cross Hospital expanded its intensive care capacity to double its usual level this week, while Wolverhampton currently has the highest COVID infection rate in the West Midlands with 997.1 cases per 100,000 people. Mr. Loughton said, "I have got several empty wards, and the reason for that is because they were for elective surgery. Those staff have been redeployed to more critical areas to deal with COVID patients. That is why I have got empty wards. To say the NHS is making COVID up is completely untrue, and we have got to continue working with what we have got. This is absolutely real. I do not normally do social media, but some of the things that have been brought to my attention are shocking."
Council officials in the region are visiting supermarkets to make sure coronavirus rules are being followed. It comes as Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield urged people to report rule breakers in shops and businesses. West Midlands Police have said they will only intervene as a last resort. Wolverhampton's Director of Public Health, John Denley, and Chief Superintendent Andy Beard of Wolverhampton Police have written to supermarkets and other key retailers asking them to review their COVID-19 risk assessments. It follows a dramatic rise in infection rates locally and nationally, driven in part by a new, more contagious variant of COVID-19. Mr. Denley said, "We have started to receive more reports from shoppers about COVID-19 rule breaking within stores being ignored and being accepted. This is both concerning and alarming, given that around 1 in 40 people in Wolverhampton currently have the virus. At this time, our city's priorities must be to look after our most vulnerable residents, protect the NHS and save lives. We all have a collective responsibility to deliver this. So, we are writing to supermarkets and other major retailers in the city who have done an incredible job continuing to serve the customers throughout the pandemic, outlining steps they need to take to keep their staff and customers safe." Councillor Brookfield has urged local people to report COVID-19 rule breaking in shops, businesses and workplaces to council enforcement officers.
Hospital trusts across the Black Country and Staffordshire raised millions of pounds through charging staff, patients and visitors to part last year, figures reveal. Trade union GMB said it is sickening that nurses, midwives and cleaners in many trusts across the country have had to pay to park at their place of work. It has called on ministers to scrap parking charges for workers altogether. The Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust made around £2.9 million through parking charges and penalty fines in the year to March 2020. Of that, £2 million was paid by patients and visitors, while £856,233 was raked in through charging staff to park. The data also shows that the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust made £1.6 million through parking charges and penalty fines during that time. Of that, £1.1 million was paid by patients and visitors, while £539,981 was from staff paying to park. Trade union GMB said charging NHS staff to park at work is disgraceful. Rachel Harrison, the union's national officer, said government cuts have inflicted a heavy toll on the NHS, but trusts should not be clawing that cash back by charging the people we rely on to keep us alive. A spokesman for the Department of Health and Social Care said in March the government committed to making hospital car parking free for NHS staff for the duration of the pandemic and is providing additional money to NHS trusts to cover the cost of implementing this. Any surplus income generated from hospital car parks not used to fund the provision of car parking, such as security and maintenance, must be reinvested into frontline care.
A head teacher from Tettenhall has demanded steps are taken to ensure a level playing field for students. James Ludlow spoke of his relief that exams have at least been cancelled so that students can be truly judged on their merits, but said more guidance was now needed on the way ahead. It comes amid concern about the disparity between schools that have better resources than others, and also individual students within schools, some of whom will have easy online access and others who may not be able to attend online classes. The majority of pupils are now learning from home, however, schools are open for vulnerable children and children of key workers. James Ludlow, principal at the King's Church of England School in Tettenhall, says he remains hopeful that the current lockdown will reduce coronavirus case numbers so that pupils can return to school as soon as it is safe to do so. It is hoped there may be some relaxation of the rules after February half term. He called on the government to now set out clear instructions on how schools should be working to ensure students missing GCSE and A levels will be judged. He said, "I believe it is the right decision to cancel the exams, but it is vital that there is a clear plan for what will replace them. This plan is needed quickly. This uncertainty increases the pressure on our young people who have already had to cope with so much during this pandemic. The problem with doing any form of exam and assessment this year is that there are big differences in the amount of lesson time that some pupils have missed compared to others. Added to this, there is the imbalance in how effectively pupils were able to learn whilst they were working from home during the first lockdown. It is likely that this will disadvantage certain sectors of the community more than others and will lead to an unlevel playing field. There is so much at stake with our national exams, and it is really important that the pupils are rewarded for their hard work with the grades they deserve."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre, back with your weekly roundup of everything that's been going on at the charity. As usual, it's been a busy week for our team as we try to support as many people as possible during this latest lockdown. Our lifestyle team have put together a bumper fortnight of online activities for you to join in with. There's something on every day during the week, so why not come and join us? From yoga and tech talks to books and crafts, there really is something different each day. To find out more, email Kim at kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's kwilliams@beaconvision.org, or give us a call on 01902 880 111. We'll also be posting links to the sessions on our social media pages. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Beacon Centre. All are welcome to our free activities. We'd love for you to join us. If you'd like to get involved, but you've got issues accessing the internet, please let us know. You can either join us via the telephone, or we might be able to help you improve your digital skills. Now, as you know, we've never needed your support more than these past few months. During the latest lockdown alone, the closure of our shops means our charity is missing out on £9,500 every week. The support that people have shown Beacon has been fantastic, and it is so appreciated. One of the easiest ways to support our charity and the work it does is through the Wolves Lottery that gives you the chance of winning a £1,000 windfall each and every week. We could all do with that right now. You'll be helping people with sight loss, as a donation of 65 pence from every £1 played will be made to the Beacon Centre. And for all you Wolves fans out there, there's a chance to win some Money Can't Buy Wolves prizes as well. It costs just £1 a week to sign up, and you can find out more on our website, www.beaconvision.org/support-us/wolves-lottery. That's www.beaconvision.org/support-us/wolves-lottery. Lastly, this week, we'd like to thank everyone who started 2021 by purchasing a doggy calendar sold in aid of Beacon. It raised an amazing £180 to support people with sight loss. We'd also like to give a special shout out to Joe Davis, who created the calendars. We so appreciate your support. If you've got a fundraising idea like Joe's, get in touch. Our fundraising team would be happy to chat. You can email supportus@beaconvision.org with your idea. That's all for this week. Stay safe, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Helen. Now we head back to the local news. Reading for us, we now have the new voice of Liz, as well as Ed, Ian and Angela. But getting us going, it's Christine.
Burglaries in the West Midlands plummeted during the second coronavirus lockdown, the silver lining of the stay-at-home message. West Midlands Police received 1,791 reports of burglaries in November last year, according to figures from the Police Crime Reports database. The figures were a drop of 13% compared to the previous year, where 2,066 were recorded in November 2019. Insurance company Aviva has warned that although some burglars may have been deterred, research has suggested that nearly two-thirds of burglaries happen while people are in their homes. While burglaries represent 8.6% of all reports made to police in the West Midlands in November 2019, they represented 5.9% of offences reported during the same month last year. Reported crime as a whole increased by 28% during the second lockdown period. Across England and Wales, there were 22,200 burglaries in November last year, 26% fewer than the same time the previous year. Figures from Humberside and Greater Manchester Forces are also excluded due to a data supply problem.
A new walk-through coronavirus testing facility has been launched in the Black Country in a bid to curb the spread of the virus. The unit has opened at Studley Gate car park next to Swanpool Park in Stourbridge and marks the third walk-through site in the borough. It comes as part of the government push to ensure people with symptoms can receive a test locally, with the site accessible without a car. Health Minister Lord Bethell said, "To respond to the coronavirus, we have built a major testing and tracing system from scratch. We are constantly working to expand and improve it with new technologies and innovations so everyone with symptoms can get a test. New walk-in sites like this one makes it even easier to get a test no matter where you live. If you have symptoms of coronavirus, I urge you to book a test today and follow the advice of NHS Test and Trace if you are contacted to protect others and stop the spread of the virus. Anyone attending an appointment at the walk-through test site will be provided with guidance on getting to and from the test site safely, with additional support for vulnerable groups and people with disabilities. The testing centre is being operated in partnership with MITI and will offer self-administered tests. Anyone with symptoms can book or order a test at nhs.uk/coronavirus. Those unable to access the internet can call 119 in England.
Rolls of artificial turf are being laid along Black Country high streets as more than £100,000 is spent on trying to brighten up town centres and encourage social distancing. Garden furniture, decking, pot plants and trees are also being added in Dudley and Stourbridge town centres, where parking spaces have been fenced off to create wider pavements during the coronavirus crisis. The work began in the High Street and New Street in Dudley this week after the council secured £285,000 through a European Regional Development Fund scheme to reopen High Street safely. A total of £120,000 from the grants is to be spent on temporary public realm changes to ensure that reopening of local economies can be managed successfully and safely. A green-painted boardwalk, a wooden bench surrounded by a rattan screen, a rack of pot plants and a tree and a planter have sprung up along the high street close to the entrance of the Trident Centre in Dudley. A similar scheme is planned for the high street in Stourbridge, where the pavements in the town centre are notoriously narrow. That work was also getting underway this week.
A Wolverhampton carpet shop has been fined £1,000 for operating during lockdown. Underfoot Interiors Limited was also issued with a prohibition notice requiring an immediate halt to activities. Wolverhampton Council found that the Park Lane-based business was letting customers inside during a visit on January the 9th, despite lockdown law only allowing for home deliveries or collection. 2 days earlier, the local authority issued the firm, which trades as Mayfair Carpets, with a warning letter after receiving a complaint that it was breaking current restrictions. The council followed this up by contacting the firm numerous times that day, and on January the 8th with advice on how to operate in line with government advice. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment, said, "We're not talking about genuine mistakes here, but deliberate breaches of the rules." He added, "This new variant of COVID-19 is much more aggressive and presents a much greater risk than during the first lockdown. There is no excuse for blatant disregard of the rules. Our hospitals are filling up with COVID patients. This is an emergency and we must all follow the rules to bring the virus under control. There is simply no excuse for any business to be breaking the rules, and we will not hesitate to fine and close down any establishment that puts public safety at risk. Our message is simple. Break the rules and face a fine. No business is above the law, and they must put the safety of their staff and customers first." The prohibition notice was served to prevent any future breaches of the restrictions, which would result in additional fines.
More than £25,000 has been spent cleaning up a Dudley lake which became polluted with diesel, as investigations continue into the cause. Around 25 swans, geese and ducks have been rescued so far at Bumblehole Pool at Bumblehole Nature Reserve in Netherton. The spillage, which happened on December the 29th, was described by an RSPCA animal rescuer as being the worst he had ever seen. Now, Dudley Council and Severn Trent Water have urged people to come forward with any information they have over the pollution. RSPCA Inspector Boris Latterer said, "This is the worst oil spill I have ever seen. It has affected a lot of the birds very badly, with many of them collapsed and hypothermic. It has been a very difficult rescue operation, as many of the birds are almost impossible to reach, not just in the water, but stuck in wooded undergrowth around the lake. Sadly, a few of the birds haven't made it, but the volunteers have been brilliant. Without them, it would be so much worse. Small fish have also been killed as a result of the spillage, which is believed to be mainly red diesel with traces of cooking oil. It is believed to have come through the surface water drainage system and a culvert into the pool. Contractors Veolia and Aquaforce are working on behalf of the council and with Nature Reserve volunteers to contain the diesel and clear it." Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "I hope whoever has done this is able to sleep at night. It has seen a number of small fish killed and cost the taxpayer thousands to clean up. Without the quick actions of volunteers at the Nature Reserve who reported it, we could have seen an even more serious impact on the Nature Reserve and our wonderful local wildlife, who suffered greatly as a result of this despicable act.
We have two more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello, it's time once again for the flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers, this week in History section. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year did Popeye first appear? Question 2. What was the name coined for the alcohol ban the USA in 1920? Question 3. What did George Clude invent in 1915? Question 4. What was the nationality of Joy Adamson of Born Free fame? Question 5. What was the name of the man who invented the Frisbee? And question 6. What was first sold in cans in 1939 in the USA? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Next up, we have more local news from Ed, Ian, Christine and Angela.
A Black Country pizza takeaway boss has been ordered to pay more than £2,600 for a string of food hygiene and health and safety offences, including dirty sinks, surfaces and equipment. Dudley Council brought the prosecution against the boss of Figaro Pizza in Halesowen after inspectors visited the premises last year. The court heard that the Peckingham Street shop had 18 offences under the Food Safety and Hygiene Regulations and the Health and Safety at Work Act. It included dirty walls and floors, as well as a failure to clean away food from surfaces and damaged containers. There was also evidence of equipment not being cleaned and damage to equipment as well. Inspectors also found insufficient lighting, handrails on the stairs and a dirty stained toilet. During the case, which was heard at Dudley Magistrate Court on January the 6th, the owner, Jamal Khan from Birmingham, pleaded guilty to all 18 offences. The Deputy District Judge ordered him to pay £1,000 for the food hygiene offences and a further £1,000 for the health and safety breaches. He was also ordered to pay £171 victim surcharge and a £500 towards costs. In mitigation, Khan entered an early guilty plea, which was noted by the court. The business, which had previously received a one-star hygiene rating under the Dudley Council system, has since ceased trading.
The rise in coronavirus cases has seen churches in Wolverhampton make a return to a virtual way of worship. Churches across the city have suspended physical worship inside the church and moved back to online worship after receiving advice from Wolverhampton Council's Director of Public Health, John Denley. In an email sent out to all places of worship, Mr. Denley spoke about the health challenges in the city, looking at the rate of infection and the number of positive cases in the last few weeks. He advised places of worship to move to a remote worship model to help with keeping congregations safe and protecting public health. It has seen churches return to a world of Zoom calls, Facebook live events, and YouTube videos, broadcast and filmed from inside churches and homes alike. Reverend Tim Eady from St. Joseph's Church in Maryhill was one of the early exponents of online broadcasts from inside the church and said the move to online worship was a sensible one. He said, "As a church, we take people's safety very seriously and want to do all we can to support our city and our nation in getting over this pandemic. The first lockdown helped us to know what to do, and while there are some of us at a certain age who struggle with the technology, we and the church have certainly adapted. We will move back to using Facebook and Zoom, and I will do what I can from inside the church, which is not always easy, but helps people to feel part of the church."
A disused railway siding just outside Wolverhampton is to be turned into a car auction holding area capable of storing 432 vehicles. British Car Auctions, which owns the site at the rear of Bessemer Close Coesley, has applied to the City Council for a change in use of the land. The area was first developed as a car auction site by Scottish Motor Auctions 9 years ago, before being bought out by British Car Auctions. Prior to that, it was derelict. At present, British Car Auctions uses the land for staff parking and some car storage, and has been leasing an adjacent 1.5-acre site to accommodate customers. The firm has been operating a park and ride scheme from this site to its main lot. However, this has proved unpopular with customers and has also led to traffic problems with people parking on grass verges along the Black Country route. In a design statement submitted alongside the plans, Richard Taylor of Wolverhampton-based ACP Architects said, "The original approved parking scheme for the BCA site had designated parking for 206 spaces for customers at the front of the British Car Auction site. Options to purchase land adjacent to British Car Auction's current site have been explored. A suitable site has been identified on the opposite side of the Black Country route, A463. This land is owned by Network Rail, who have been approached and are happy to relinquish ownership."
A call has gone out to communities to apply for funding to enable people to get creative during the present national lockdown. Creative Black Country, part of a programme funded by the Arts Council England, is searching for people to show their ideas to help others develop their creative side. Kerry O'Coy, marketing manager, said, "We are offering small commissions of £500 to £2,000 for projects that develop creative activity and for local communities in the Black Country. We are looking for creative, socially distanced lockdown activities which bring fun, joy and creativity to local people." Last year, Creative Black Country saw a new strand of commissioned work during the first lockdown. These included ceramic kits sent out to families, art packs and an online poetry group taking place on Zoom. People produced outdoor art galleries with their neighbours, designed positive posters for window displays, assembled a street community of events, led online dance and drumming tutorials and created videos with the community participants. "The commission projects were so successful that we are bringing Creative Connections back this year. People can be as creative as they want, whether it is through theatre, sculpture, taking photographs or whatever they want to do. Anyone interested has to apply via the www.creativeblackcountry.co.uk website by January the 25th.
Final plans for a new major industrial development in Pensnet have been approved despite opposition from residents. The application for reserved matters relating to the creation of a business park on land off Dreadnought Road, owned by Hinton, Perry and Davenhill Limited, was given the thumbs up at Dudley Council Development Control Committee meeting. Opponents of the development hoped councillors would heed their fears over road safety, but the committee voted to approve the plan, which had won the backing of council planning officers ahead of the meeting. The application was for the construction of a new industrial building after outline approval for the development was granted in summer 2019. An access to the site has since been constructed. Councillor Judy Foster had objected, saying the 10-metre-high building would destroy residents' privacy, and concerns about road safety were also raised by the councillor and residents. But a report to the committee said, "The principle of the employment development and access was established at outline stage, and the submitted reserved matters are considered to be appropriate from a design, amenity and highway safety point of view."
Now we have Beacon Voices, which this week is brought to us by the Building Better Opportunities Employment Officer Luke, who tells us about the Bridges project and how it helps people with sight loss get into the world of work.
Hello everyone, my name is Luke Purdy. I work on the BBO Bridges Employment Project as an employment officer at the Beacon Centre in Sedgley. I work alongside Ranjit Chopra, who has the same role as me as an employment officer, so we work hand in hand with different participants and different caseloads. We have Sharon Bannister, who is our administrator, who helps us massively with all the paperwork. But the main people that you'll see if joining the project would be myself and Ranjit. I'll tell you a little bit about the project. So the BBO Bridges Employment Project helps support people in Wolverhampton and the Black Country living with sight loss or any other disability or barrier to find work or improve their lives. The programme supports people aged 25 and over to increase their work readiness and confidence for the purpose of progression into education, employment, self-employment, or to improve independent job search skills. Typically, we do this in a number of ways. Obviously, people that come to us, their needs will vary massively from person to person. And we understand that you need to have a bespoke package, really, to support everyone. So the sort of stuff we do that people can access is one-to-one mentoring with their employment officer for support with job search skills, CVs, application forms, and interview techniques. We do tailored IT support sessions, that's available. And we also do work placements within our Fab Lab facility, which is a digital and design skills manufacturing area. It's a brilliant setup and you can get a lot of good experience down there. We can also support individuals accessing voluntary placements, and we have loads of resources via our big network of partners, which can all help you develop new skills. So the BBO Bridges project is a large project, and in the Black Country, there's many different elements to it. So the Beacon Centre is one partner, but we have a whole network of partners that can support you if we can't help with a certain issue. So that's typically the BBO Bridges project in a nutshell. My advice, really, if you are struggling to look for work, you know, you've got barriers, you've been struggling for a long time, I would suggest using the free services that are out there, which a lot of people aren't aware of. And it's projects like this that I work on that can really open your eyes to what is out there and what support is available to you. And it's all free, you know. So if you are struggling to look for work and you want the extra support, utilize all the free stuff. There's loads of free courses that you can get on to build up your qualifications while you're not working. But this project that I work on can really help people like that. So if you do want to join up or you want to get any more information, you can contact me. My email address is lpurdy@beaconvision.org, or you can contact me on my mobile, which is 07849 802 458. I hope that's okay. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Luke. Now we have our final local news section with Angela, Ed, Christine. But first off, we start with Liz.
A man who cares for rescued owls has found himself in a financial flap because of the national lockdowns. Carl Perry of Oxley, Wolverhampton, is known by many people as the Owl Man. The 56-year-old bought his first bird from a certified breeder in 2013 and since then has given up his job as a mobile disc jockey to concentrate on talks to schools, scouts and guides and visits to old people's homes and appearances at local fetes. His passion is non-profit making, and Carl asks for donations for those handling the birds, of which he now has 32 in aviaries. These range from little owls to the European eagle owl, the largest of the species in the world. Despite facing difficulties from the pandemic, he is still taking in rescued birds. He said, "After buying my first bird, my granddaughter Megan told people at school and the teachers asked me to give a talk as they were doing a project. Things just grew from there and now it has become a full-time job. Because of lockdowns, I've been unable to give talks and pay visits to homes. It has been difficult as our volunteers have not been able to come along and I've been doing all the maintenance. We are struggling with £80 a fortnight food bill for the birds, but we do have good suppliers. Recently, our freezer broke down, but fortunately, a woman kindly donated one. Carl is now planning to start a GoFundMe page to help meet the bills for the centre."
A hairstylist from Wolverhampton has proved she is a cut above the rest after gaining national recognition. Chantelle Garrison, 36, has been named Hairstylist of the Year West Midlands. The salon she owns, Addictions Hair and Beauty in Stafford Street, Wolverhampton, has also gained an award as a marketing trailblazer. Chantelle said, "This is a nationally recognised salon award and I was up against a wide range of salons throughout the UK. I am proud to have won the title, and this is a great boost of recognition for myself as an award-winning hairstylist and the salon. It is my first major award, and now I am entered for more national awards for business and owner of the year titles and a social media hair and beauty award. I was judged on my portfolio because of the lockdown restrictions and think my wealth of experience in working with all hair types helped me to win. I've been working as a hairdresser since I was 16 years old and have trained up my staff using my skills and have also done work for fashion and music videos. 5 years ago, I also launched my own product range, Addictions Hair Cosmetics. Chantal is now looking forward to receiving the plaque and trophy she has won.
Dudley Zoo's sloths have taken the top spot for the most adopted animals of 2020. Reggie and Flo, Dudley Zoo and Castle's pair of Linnie's two-toed sloths, have claimed the top spot. As one of the attraction's only sources of income during lockdown, the zoo's marketing team sent out hundreds of personalised adoption packs in the run-up to the festive season, with the most adoptions sent out for the breeding pair of sloths. 2-year-old female Flo only arrived 5 months ago, relocating from the Netherlands to form a breeding pair with Reggie, but she has quickly become as much of a fan favourite as he is. And the two have certainly taken a shine to one another, with keepers photographing them even sharing a nest box in recent days. Dudley Zoo and Castle's marketing manager Andrea Hales said, "We thought Reggie was popular with visitors, but Flo has also amassed a great deal of admirers, and we sent out more Christmas gift adoptions for the pair of them than any other animal on site." Other huge hits with end-of-year adopters were Arctic Fox Tommy, who had a great time playing in the recent snowfall, and 5-year-old Gawa, the red panda, as well as Coconut the flamingo and Norman the giant Asian pond turtle. Andrea added, "All funds raised from adoption packages supports our ongoing conservation work and provide much needed revenue during these past difficult few months. We are so grateful to the visitors who have helped us with these purchases, and we hope all our new adopters will be able to visit us soon to see their animals."
A cafe is offering £1 breakfasts after the sight of what is being offered as part of free school meals. Alfred G from Brownhills works at the family-run Brandon Way Cafe in West Bromwich. He was outraged after seeing the many viral posts on social media of what has been offered out to some children as £30 worth of food for 1 week to replace free school meals. He decided he had to do something to help. Alfred said, "I saw those pictures of what has been supplied to these children, and for that price it is just ridiculous. I just thought, how could you serve that to people? It is disgraceful." Alfred's bargain breakfast includes one piece of bacon, one sausage, one egg, a pot of beans and toast, all for £1. Despite the cafe losing out due to the continuous restrictions in Sandwell, Alfred is determined to do his bit for the community. He added, "I can't afford to keep locking down. We have already lost £10,000 in 6 months, but I know we have got to keep going and we will come back stronger. Supporting these people in the community, I know they will support us back. Unfortunately, we cannot afford to do deliveries for the price of the breakfasts, so we are asking people to come and collect them. These breakfasts are for children, but I am sure we will get some adults who order them too, but that is just the chance I've got to take." The initiative will begin on Monday, January the 13th, and will run until March the 31st.
5 people in the Black Country have celebrated after they won a combined £180,000 through a lottery. The Neighbours in Wolverhampton received the cash boost on Saturday after their postcode WV46BS was announced as a winner in the People's Postcode Lottery. 4 neighbours won £30,000 each, with one taking home £60,000 due to them having 2 tickets for the draw. Mick McCann, aged 51, was one of the winners and learned about his £30,000 win on a video call with People's Postcode Lottery ambassador Daniel Johnson. Mick, a plumbing and heating engineer, said winning the money was fantastic, as he was joined on the call by his fiancée, Raj Kumari, and said they were planning to put the money toward a wedding and a house. He said, "We're planning on getting married later this year, if we're allowed to. It will go towards a house as well." It takes a lot of pressure off us with it going towards a house and a wedding. It's going to make our dreams come true this year, hopefully. Another winner was Claire Picking, aged 47, who was shocked to see she had won £30,000. The pharmacy technician said she wanted to spend the money on a nice holiday to relax for a week and that she also wanted to treat her family, particularly her parents. The other winners chose to remain anonymous, but their prizes will be paid directly into their bank accounts. People's Postcode Lottery Ambassador Daniel Johnson sent his congratulations to the winners. He said, "What amazing news for Mick, Raj, Claire and all of our other winners in Wolverhampton. I hope Mick and Raj get the wedding of their dreams and that Claire gets that lovely holiday too."
We now turn our attention to Flashback Roger with another flashback load of facts that took place this week in history.
Everybody, this is our flashback section where we'll be taking a look back at some events from the week of the 17th to the 23rd of January of years gone by, and where of course you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that we set earlier. On January the 17th, 1929, the cartoon character Popeye made his debut. Popeye is helped by Castor Oil, a character in the strip Thimble Theatre cartoon, and it helped him to navigate his ship. But I'm sure that we can all remember the later Popeye cartoons with his arch enemy Bluto and poor old Olive Oil, who Popeye was always saving from Bluto's dastardly grasp. 17th of January 1920, the 18th Amendment goes into effect, imposing prohibition across the USA. While it did not prohibit the consumption of alcohol, it did ban the sale, manufacture and transportation of alcoholic beverages. This caused beer and wine and spirits to be prohibited. The 18th Amendment was repealed in 1933 by the 21st Amendment, 13 years after it was introduced. On January the 19th in 1915, George Claude receives the US patent for his invention of the neon light. It was an instant worldwide sensation. And what a dull world it would be without neon light in advertising, science and entertaining illuminations. January the 20th in 1910, Joy Adamson was born. She was an Austrian environmentalist and author. She wrote Born Free in 1960 because in 1956, Adamson's husband, George Adamson, shot and killed a lion in self-defense. He found that she had attacked to protect her three cubs. George rescued the cubs, giving two to a zoo and keeping one that they named Elsa. Joy wrote the book Born Free in 1960, describing the raising of the cub and setting her free. The Adamsons were featured in the 1966 movie of the same title as the book. On January the 23rd in 1920, Fred Morrison was born. He was an American inventor. He invented the Frisbee about in 1937. He got the idea when someone offered to buy the cake pan he and his future wife were tossing back and forth at the beach. He was also a prisoner of the infamous Stalag 13 during World War II. On January the 24th in 1939, the first canned beer is sold. Kruger beer was brewed in America. The Kruger Brewery was reluctant to can their beer at first, but was offered the canning equipment for a free trial by American Can Company. With them, they only had to pay if it was successful. The canned beer was a huge success, with other breweries soon adopting the practice. That's the quiz for this week, folks. Enjoy it. Do well. I'll see you next week. This is Rod saying, ta-da for now. Ta-da.
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for the week ahead is going to be very mixed bag, with a bit of everything expected. Due to the time of year, low UV levels are expected all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 8:01 a.m. for the sunrise and 4:41 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 22nd of January, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 5 degrees. On Saturday 23rd of January, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 4 degrees. On Sunday 24th of January, we have light snow and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 5 degrees. Moving on to Monday 25th of January, we have sleet showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 7 degrees. And finally, on Tuesday 26th of January through to Thursday 28th of January, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 9 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks, Mina. Now with news from West Brom and Wolves, it's Ian.
Mateus Pereira scored two penalties as Albion grabbed a huge Black Country derby victory over fierce rivals Wolves at Molineux. The first meeting of the two sides for 9 years saw Sam Allardyce's men grab just their second win of the season, plunging an already difficult campaign for Nuno Espirito Santo's side to a new low. Pereira opened the scoring early on from the spot, but the hosts led at half-time thanks to goals from Fabio Silva and Willy Bolly. The Baggies, picking up their first 3 points under Allardyce, then had Semi Ajayi head in and Pereira net again from 12 yards for what could be a turning point in their season. An enormous boost in their survival fight, while Wolves must be extra careful not to get dragged into it at the wrong end of the table themselves. This was not a game high on quality, but Albion certainly had more grit and determination about them. Wolves, meanwhile, are in trouble. Both sides had their poor moments at the back, but the hosts were especially woeful. Conceding two Pereira penalties and failing to deal with a long throw-in in the build-up to Ajayi's goal, it was an embarrassing defensive display. Silva got a confidence-boosting goal, but having led 2-1 at the break, Nuno's players then completely capitulated. Now 12 without a clean sheet in the league, there are serious problems. The Baggies, though, did what you have to do in derbies, put your bodies on the line and not give up. Their best day of the season so far, without a doubt. Also, undoubtedly Wolves' worst, perhaps of Nuno's tenure. Wolves are looking to accelerate the process and improve Patrick Cotroni's off-field situation as they hope the recalled striker starts scoring again. The 23-year-old Italian surprisingly returned from a loan spell at Fiorentina in his homeland earlier this month and has since made 3 substitute appearances. But boss Nuno Espirito Santo admits his living arrangements amid the difficulties brought on by COVID-19 are not ideal, and the club are aiming to sort those out quickly as the former AC Milan centre-forward aims to reignite his career. In the case of Patrick, I can be clear. What we did was to bring him first, said Nuno. We brought him as soon as we could, but there's an issue with his family coming over to England, especially with his partner. There are restrictions, and now we need clearance from public health, and also some kind of authorization to be in the country. It's been hard. He's in the hotel now. As a club, we don't want our players to be in the hotel. We want our players in their own homes with the comfort of their families, like we try to do with everybody. There are young players here with their dad, mum, sister, whoever. It's so important. A fantastic Mateus Pereira goal wasn't enough for Albion in their midweek Premier League fixture, suffering defeat at the Hammers. The Baggies headed to the London Stadium eager to build on their Black Country derby win over Wolves. But despite an overall positive performance in the capital, they returned home with nothing to show for their efforts. West Ham opened the scoring in first half stoppage time when Jarrod Bowen turned the ball in from close range. Pereira then pulled Sam Allardyce's side level shortly after the restart with a wonderful strike from 18 yards. To the hosts' credit, they responded well to the setback and after a succession of good chances got back in front through Michael Antonio. But in the final 15 minutes the Baggies threw men forward in a bid to get an equaliser, and they came close to getting one right at the end with substitute Darnell Furlong powering a strike just inches wide after he met a whipped Kieran Gibbs cross.
Thanks for that, Ian. We now join Sharon, who has for us a sight loss blog titled The Dreaded Light Bulb.
Is there such a person as the light bulb police? I often ask myself, how do I do it? Imagine my scenario. After a busy day working from home, I'm cooking dinner, task lamps on, as well as the strip light in my kitchen. I was using my dry fryer to cook some homemade chips. I've not had a chip pan for many, many years, as they are dangerous, particularly when you have sight loss. It goes dark around 4:30, particularly now in winter, but I have to admit I have my lights on all day long as I need light. I decided I needed to pop upstairs to take some towels that had been in the dryer to the airing cupboard. I switched on the landing light and heard a large ping. The whole house went into complete darkness. Oh my God, what do I do now? Was my immediate thought. I was alone in the house. No lights. My electric cupboard is situated high on a wall in my utility room. I need step ladders. I don't do step ladders very well. When I am up on a third rung, I can't let go as I wobble and feel like I am floating in the air. Picture this. I use my mobile phone torch to find the ladders under the stairs. Then I am working out how to reach the trip switch. Phone in one hand, holding onto the stepladder, leaning over my freezer to reach the electric box. My legs were wobbling. I was hot. I was feeling for the trip switch in the dark. Got it. The electric came back on and it was a phew moment. I did it without falling. My parents were not happy with me climbing on ladders, but I did it. Pops, I replied. What seems so simple for sighted people can be quite an experience for us and people with other disabilities and the elderly who are quite frail. My son changed the dreaded light bulb when he got home from work and asked, "What would you have done if you didn't have me?" I replied, "I would have called the light bulb police or been left in the dark." To my relief, my homemade chips didn't burn and tea was lovely. But my question is, how do other people manage in an emergency when their electricity suddenly goes off?
Thanks, Sharon. We now turn our attentions to Mina, who has for us the answers for the flashback quiz. So Mina, are you ready?
Yes, I am. So here we go. Question one. In what year did Popeye first appear? The answer, 1939. Question two. What was the first name coined for the alcohol ban the USA in 1920? And it was Prohibition. Question three. What did George Clude invent in 1915? And the answer here is the neon light. Question four. What was the nationality of Joy Adamson of Born Free fame? It was Austrian. Question five. What was the name of the man who invented the Frisbee? And of course, it was Fred Morrison. And finally, question six. What was first sold in cans in 1939 in the USA? Now, I'm sure you all got this correct. Of course, it was beer. How did you do? I hope you all did well. But if not, there's always another chance for you to have another go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we turn to Graham Fisher and his tales from the barn.
Hello. The practice of twinning between towns and cities is both universal and quite ancient. The earliest recorded twinning in Europe was between Paderborn, Germany and Le Mans, France, in the year 836. Closer to home, Keithley in West Yorkshire established an arrangement with French communities in Suresnes and Puteaux in 1905. Originally intended to promote cultural and commercial ties, the practice flourished after the Second World War as a way to also promote mutual understanding. Coventry, for example, was twinned with Stalingrad and later with Dresden as an act of peace and reconciliation, all three cities, of course, having been heavily bombed during the war. So twin towns are ubiquitous. Close to the area of my birth, Bewdley is twinned with Fort Mahon Plage in France, whilst in the area where I'm now domiciled, Hay-on-Wye is twinned with, of all places, Timbuktu in West Africa. Twinning is a tangible and instantly recognisable form of connection. But there are other ties that bind in less obvious contexts, and although they may be so subtle as to pass by largely unnoticed, they are nevertheless there and in some evidential strength to boot. In describing some examples, they also serve to illustrate how the assuredness of our convictions may be called seriously into question by the irrefutability of events we otherwise simply cannot explain. On the afternoon of the 30th of June 1921, a man was driving through the countryside when he made a remarkable observation that was to have echoes around the globe. His name was Alfred Watkins, and when he looked at the Ordnance Survey map on his travels through Blackwardine in Herefordshire, just a few miles from where I'm sitting in the barn right now, he was astonished by what sprang off the page. A series of notable landmarks, hilltops, an old lane, some historic encampments, all lay in a perfect straight line, extending over several miles of otherwise quite unremarkable landscape. Probing further and taking to higher ground for a better view, he saw that this Blackwardine line was not isolated, but part of a network that stood out, as he put it, like glowing wires all over the surface of the country. Watkins devoted his life to studying these routes, which he insisted were not merely a superimposition on the landscape, but were in fact lines of communication and travel that had been identified and used by our primal forebears long before the days of roads, signage, maps, or any of the navigational paraphernalia we nowadays take for granted. He called them ley lines and described them, and I quote, as a truth that had lain in plain sight all along, if only one knew how to look. His seminal book, The Old Straight Track, first published in 1925, spawned countless theories, and the term ley line has since been subsumed to include dowsing, crystal swinging, telluric lines of force, much more. All a far cry from Watkins' original premise, but nonetheless part of the burgeoning movement of Earth mysteries, any student of which will eventually find their way back to Watkins. In the interest of balance, I should add that from the more sceptical end of the spectrum, Watkins has attracted much criticism and even ridicule, and there are those who refuse to accept his hypotheses as anything more than unverifiable hogwash. One critic went as far as debunking Watkins by dint of ley lines denoted by the alignment of red telephone boxes, but I'm minded to think this is more an example of scurrilous attempts to discredit the man, rather than objectively disavowing his observations. But let us leave Watkins, who died in 1935, in our wake as we fast forward several decades to a frosty New Year's Eve shortly before I've moved Waleswards and a convivial gathering of neighbours around a glowing fire in an anonymous King Swinford lounge. For some reason I can't recall amongst the wine and mince pies, the subject of our merriment turned to the suggestion of a line of force through our host's lounge, which he then gleefully demonstrated by holding a couple of pieces of wire coat hanger parallel between his thumb and forefinger on each hand and walking across the room. Halfway along, the wires turned to face each other. To ripples of mirth, he repeated the exercise several times as it happened, all with the same result. Amidst mocking laughter and allegations of, "You're doing that on purpose," he gave me the wires, instructed me how to hold them, and sent me on my way across his lounge. To everyone's amusement, but to my utter astonishment, the wires crossed. I had made no effort, applied no force, engaged in no trickery. Those wires crossed. The evening concluded as we wended our way back to our respective homes. But for me, raised with the scientific discipline that steers me instinctively towards everything having a rational explanation, I was baffled, disturbed even, and could not fathom that experience. Despite what I felt was my education, my predisposition, dare I say my intellect, I simply couldn't rationalise it. So, up in the morning in an earliness that minimised the likelihood of anyone seeing me, and armed with my own two pieces of wire, I traced that line across the fields opposite my home, through the direction of my neighbour's lads that I'd been in just a few hours earlier, and across diverse properties beyond, until I could go no further without fracturing the laws on trespass, which was quite a distance. I've since reflected on this many times, and suffice to say this one experience served to call into question my own confidence in the, let's call it the unwritten theory of everything, in which our daily empirical observations are ultimately underpinned by the unimpeachable logic of reason, that same reason being atop a pyramid of shifting sand which is then whisked from beneath us. Now I can, I think, be forgiven for not revealing exactly where all this occurred, lest my unfortunate former neighbours are inundated by wire-wielding devotees. But no matter, for I subsequently traced numerous similar lines around the area, and all extending for several hundred yards and beyond before I ran out of room to manoeuvre. Well, go out with your own coat hangers and see for yourself. Those lines are there. Now, the sombre observations of Alfred Watkins of the 1920s may be far removed from the light-hearted, festive experiences of yours truly and his neighbours almost a century later. But in the interim, a worldwide movement has blossomed in seeking to explain such earth mysteries. The Black Country alone has several such groups, the scope of which seems to extend by the year as more mysteries are revealed and, commensurately, more become unexplained. Many towns and cities in the Black Country and surrounding area are twinned. By way of a small selection, Dudley is twinned with both Fort William in Scotland and Bremen in Germany, Wolverhampton with Buffalo in New York, and Stourbridge with the nearly but not quite the same named Stourbridge in Massachusetts. Even the diminutive Treacle and Seasden just outside Wolverhampton can boast links with Condé Saint-Libier in France. But what if those twinning criteria were extended to more nebulous and as yet unexplained comparators as identified and promulgated by Alfred Watkins and his successors ever since? The very notion of perplexing tracks and abstruse pathways around the Black Country being part of a wider, all-encompassing network that was both recognised and used by the ancients in a way that defies our contemporary understanding does indeed open intriguing avenues of conjecture as to how, in some enigmatic way, we may ultimately all be twinned. For my part, I'm of open mind as to that which Watkins found in Herefordshire. But as for those wire coat hangers in King Swinford, well, for me that will remain beyond debate. They definitely did move. And I'm still none the wiser as to how. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!